All right, we are here for the Brent and Chuck podcast. We're so glad that you have decided to join us after a wonderful service. And we all know that we want to stay away from man-eaters. That was what I really caught from the service. And that we all, maybe the picture up on the stage, was it meant to say that we're all supposed to have a chest like Sylvester Stallone? I'm missing the connection here.
It might have been one of the wrestlers on you know, Monday Night Raw or something.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know,
you explain this to Chuck, because I want to draw a little bit of connection between what we did this past Sunday and what we want to talk about today.
Let me say, when you see those images that we've been using on some of the books,
right?
William found a guy who painted what he called a book cover.
Mm-hmm.
So. That was this guy's, this artist's rendering for a book cover for Judges.
Right, right.
And yeah, so that was, you know, just an image that he thought of. And we adjusted it a little bit because, honestly, we didn't feel comfortable about putting the original image
I'm glad.
But yeah, so the whole connection was we were not going to be able to cover every judge in the service.
Right.
And in just thinking about the broad book of Judges, Samson is one of the most famous that we think about, you know. And so just to say, Samson's weakness was women.
Right.
And that was a song that we knew that was kind of a warning about
ladies of the night.
Yeah, loose right. women, whatever, loose women, however yeah. you wanted, whatever you want to call them.
But
so anyway, we just thought that would be a somewhat of a cool way to talk about Samson's weakness.
Right. Well, and what's interesting about that is that, you know, this wasn't the first time when it came to the loose women that Samson had been disobedient. He had some other areas a little bit earlier on where he was already sort of slipping a little bit.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I think, too, specifically, there were instructions given to him and instructions given to his parents. So
and early on, he found some woman in somewhere else. Like, I want to, he went to his mom and dad and said, get me that foreign woman.
Right, yeah. I was thinking,
he wasn't supposed to do that either.
Well, do you remember where he found the carcass and he fed it to his parents? He pulled that nice... I think it was honey. Right? Mm-hmm. Honey out of that. And he didn't tell his parents where he got it from. So I'm just saying all that to say, because we always want to say that the way you end up in the bed of a loose woman does not happen overnight.
Well, yeah.
There's always compromises along the way. That was all I was trying to say.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to trace that through Samson's life.
Yeah, your heart is, your heart can be drawn away, but it doesn't start just... at that immediate
that's
moment.
Exactly, that's what I'm trying to say.
Right,
yeah,
right.
That's all.
Yeah, and you mentioned the other thing. So even prior to Samson being born, I found the story interesting that his mom is one of these regularly mentioned barren women.
Yeah.
Samson's dad's name is Manoah, and his birth is recorded in Judges 13. And the angel of the Lord comes to the woman, we do not know her name, and lets her know that she will be bearing a son and that she is to be careful not to drink wine or other alcoholic beverages.
Right. Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Or eat anything unclean, because she's going to be conceiving, and then says don't cut his hair because he's going to be a Nazarite and save Israel from the power of the Philistines. So she tells Manoah, her husband, about this. Manoah's real interested in it. Man, let's get some more information about this. Why we got this, you know, is this legit? What are we going to supposed to do for this boy that's coming? And so the angel of God does come back. And so Manoah says to the angel of God, when your words come true, so he believed that this was going to happen,
right,
what will the boy's responsibilities and mission be?
Right.
So dad is wanting to know about this awesome son that apparently is going to be born.
Right.
And maybe he's thinking, man, I'm going to have a famous son.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the angel of the Lord answers to him, "Your wife needs to do everything I told her. She must not eat anything that comes from the grapevine or drink wine or other alcoholic beverages, and she must not eat anything unclean. Your wife must do everything I've commanded her." He never really answers the question about what is the mission of my son going to be. He doesn't answer that. His answer is, you and your wife need to be faithful to what we have told you.
Right.
And so when I read that, I thought, you know what? The greatest thing we can do for the mission of our children is to be faithful ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
As parents.
Yeah. And I would think, I mean, maybe, would you think this application would be there too, that, you know, if you see yourself or your children as set apart maybe for certain things, that you can maybe sometimes by the Lord be asked to withhold things that aren't directly sinful, but that that for every reason the Lord wants you to withhold from a certain activity. I was thinking specifically about alcohol.
Oh, in this okay, situation. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, I'm sure that the restrictions here for Samson's mom were connected to this Nazirite vow,
right?
You know. That those who take the Nazirite vow are not supposed to,
right?
You know, drink alcohol and,
right.
and eat unclean things or cut their hair, and so right. I'm sure that is the connection here. But I was just so challenged to say, you know what, our number one responsibility is to be faithful as parents, be faithful what God has called us to do.
That's right, yeah.
And then what our children are going to be responsible to respond to God's mission for them,
right?
In light of what they've seen mom and dad do as well,
right? Yeah,
you know. I don't know. That was just a little tidbit.
No, I think so. I mean, just reiterating the idea that, and on the flip side, that you do the best you can, you be faithful as you can, but at the end of the day, they're responsible for them too. So the flip side is,
sure,
if you've been faithful, you know, you're not called to beat yourself up all day long for maybe some of the decisions that your son or daughter chooses to make or not make.
That's true.
So I want to add that in there too.
Right, right. So. Yeah, so we got through Judges. We've gotten through Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
You love the and we covered this in our SALT group on Sunday night.
Right.
This whole idea and picture of the kinsman redeemer.
Right. You know, let me talk about that for a little bit, because one of the things that I think previous cultures would have understood this a lot better. Did you know that even as recently as 100 years ago, that it was not uncommon for if someone died who was within the family, within a relative family, for another family member to come in and marry that woman if it was age appropriate and it was sort of a good situation? I mean, let me give you an example. In Gone with the Wind, you saw them marrying cousins. Mm. In my own family, there was a picture of I have a great uncle who ended up marrying a woman who, because his brother died at a very young age and he was not yet married yet. And so his brother, as he was dying, asked him, can you marry and take care of my wife when I die? And so, again, something that happened, this was over 60 years ago, but I saw that in my family. And of course, he went on to have children with her, and they're gone now, but the children are still alive. So this just powerful image of someone who's a kinsman, which means relationally at some aspect, and then redeeming. And redeeming is such a good word because it's the idea of buying back something that is, you know, for whatever reason, away or put away or in the pit or something like that. So
yeah,
that's such a powerful
The Holman translates it the family redeemer.
Yeah, that
in our SALT group, my wife, she loved kinsman redeemer. Yeah. She thought that sounded a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know. Spiritual.
Well, and it sounds like it should be on the wall of some great English hall, doesn't it? You know, the kinsman, you know.
Right.
If I was going to give a speech, I'm going to throw in the word kinsman. It just sounds a lot cooler.
Well, what an incredible picture of Christ and his church that is given to us in this
Absolutely.
Book of Ruth. You
Absolutely.
Know, and if you don't see it,
right.
You're blind.
Right.
You don't see it in Ruth. And if you haven't gotten that far, you need to, it'll only take you a few minutes to read the book of Ruth.
Right. Yeah.
But boy, what a picture of Boaz as Christ, Ruth being the church, and Boaz stepping in mm-hmm. to to buy back.
Yeah.
And to redeem that tough situation that Ruth found herself in. I mean, if he hadn't have done it, she was...
Death and poverty was going to be the other...
Yeah.
Was going to be her option. I mean, the reason why, that's why I throw this out here, I think it's just a powerful image, because when I read this as a youth, and I don't know if you remember this when you were a youth, when you first read this, it sounds more gross, because you think, oh, some old uncle has to marry some young, you know, niece. Yeah. And so we just got to take that image out. That's why I started there with the whole idea that the idea of taking care of the family, mm-hmm. keeping things in the family, wasn't so uncommon 100, 150 years ago. So we just have to just understand that.
And you're not. I don't guess you are implying that we ought to be staying within our brothers and sisters and cousins now.
No. But what I am saying, I mean, okay. I mean, just go back to my own family thing, which I thought was a decent example. Mm-hmm. You had the idea that take care of. Take care of her. Take care of my family when something happens. I mean, I can tell you right now that if something were to happen to me today, I've already had conversations with family members that I say, okay, can you come in and manage my child that's coming, or my children? Yeah. And can you come in and help Courtney manage the finances?
Sure.
Because there's going to be a large amount of money coming her way. She doesn't know what to do with that. So I'm just saying, I think there's ways. Mm-hmm. That we would have that today.
You realize that you just told the entire world that your wife is going to be coming into pretty good.
No, all I mean is
if you're gone, you just told the whole world.
Well, the thing is
do we need to edit that part out?
No, because I have an insurance policy. I have an insurance policy. Now, I want you to know this: insurance policies on 29-year-olds are less than $10 a month. Just want to let you know. So if I die, that's all my life is worth every month. It's less than $10.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who know what that $10 will buy. So anyway, we might move on.
Well, I don't even know what you're implying now, but go ahead.
I'm just saying that, you know, if Courtney listens to this and she knows there's a lot of money out there waiting for her if you're gone.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, that is true, because Courtney and I, I've told you this story before. You know, when Billy Graham's wife was asked, did you ever consider divorcing old Billy? Because, you know, Billy wasn't always the easiest guy to live with.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, divorce, never. Murder, yes. And so Courtney and I, we have that same sort of philosophy and understanding that death before divorce.
Mm. So. Okay. So if you are gone, then Courtney is the first one we should ask about that.
Yeah,
I see.
She's a suspect.
Okay, now that we've got that. Let's move on to something that might be a little more helpful. I put out on Facebook this week for some feedback for folks since we have made it through Ruth. And I just wanted to read some of the feedback we've gotten. And the question was, what's the most awesome thing you've learned about God so far?
Right.
And I got some feedback on that, so I wanted to read some of the responses. Is that okay?
Yeah,
as we kind of wrap up our time together. Dub wrote in, he said, God's faithfulness. In spite of his people's, and these are my words, I'm interpreting for Dub, God is faithful in spite of his people's fickleness.
Right. That's a good one.
That's something awesome that he saw. Carol says that God has a plan, is what she's learned, and he is in control of that plan. Roger said he is holy, and he put holy in all caps.
All right.
And so he's saying God is really holy, and we don't really realize how holy he is. Karen said life is all about God.
That's good.
All of life is all about God. Stephanie said that she has learned that God is not distant, unforgiving, and uncaring, which are misconceptions that she has had from her childhood.
Hmm.
And so this is some fresh insight to her. And so she said that reading through the Old Testament so far has kind of shown her that you don't have to wait for the New Testament to get to the good stuff.
Yeah.
Because she's learning that God is he's close, he's forgiving, and he's caring.
Yeah.
So that's some of the feedback that we've had so far. Encourage all the listeners to jump on Facebook, send me a note.
Yeah.
What's the most awesome thing you've learned about God so far? We'll
that's
be able
right.
to share it.
Keep reading, keep listening, keep learning.
Yep. Thanks for joining us today. Have a great week, man. Keep reading 1 Samuel. See you Sunday.